Hello and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Eichten, and with me today is Jack Borman. Jack, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good. Ready to have the Wolves start playing basketball again. It's been a nice week or so off here, but ultimately we gotta get going on this hopeful playoff run that'll either last a couple weeks or maybe a couple months.
Yeah, I think either way it will be endlessly entertaining, no matter how you slice it.
Yeah, very true. A lot different kind of vibe going in. Well, actually, I was going to say a lot different vibe, but I don't know. Probably fairly similar first round vibes to Phoenix last year. Not as much doom and gloom as last year, but also I'm sure the general baseline for people was higher on last year's team than this one. Fair or not. But yeah, right off the bat, just wanted to kind of get your thoughts on what ended up kind of transpiring the last night of the season, really the last week of the season, where the Wolves win a bunch of games down the stretch, lose what ended up seeming like a pivotal game in Milwaukee. But they draw the Lakers. What do you kind of think about kind of the season as a whole in that sense and them drawing the Lakers? It could have been the Nuggets if they just simply won one more game, if they end up losing that game, say in Memphis, or if Harrison Barnes doesn't help out the Wolves and beat the Spurs, the Wolves would have had to play Memphis on Tuesday. Maybe that would have been better if they would have been able to beat Memphis in the play-in game. You're playing Houston instead of Lakers. I don't know. What do you just kind of think about the Lakers draw? Was it the worst case scenario? What do you think?
Yeah, I obviously don't think it was the worst case scenario, because all these players will tell you, like, having a full week off to prepare and knowing exactly who your opponent is, like, they'd for sure take the guarantee of that versus having to go in the playoff or in the play-in and potentially getting, a more friendly, playoff matchup. But then again, like, the Rockets are no slouch either. When you look at, the games that the Wolves played with them this season, all of them were super intense, physical, pretty draining games. And so I think, I don't know that that would be a guarantee to be an easier series than this one. But yeah, just with the Lakers, I think there's just a ton of excitement for me personally in that, I gained such an appreciation for Luka and everything that he does, seeing him up close in person five times last year in the playoffs. Was at all of those games. And I think that he's just an insanely insanely maniacal genius when it comes to reading the floor and how quickly he can process everything. And then you put him with, another player in LeBron that can do the same thing at an even higher level is super scary to think about going up against on a nightly basis in the playoffs. But look, I think it's a wildly different team than that Mavs team last year. I thought that yeah. Mavs team last year was about as well as you could construct a team around Luka Doncic. And this version of the Lakers is very different than that version of the Mavericks. So I think, looking at it through the Luka lens is certainly a little bit different. But yeah, I think it's definitely exciting. Like, I don't think that there, is any super easy path in the West when you think about it. And I just think that, all these guys will relish in the opportunity to kind of get their lick back against Luka, but also be able to go up against one of the greatest players to ever do it, LeBron. So I think it'll be a ton of fun, and I think this series is a lot closer and will go longer than maybe a lot of people are thinking at face value.
Yeah, I tend to agree. What I've been kind of thinking about is, even if you assume the Lakers are even like the best team in the Western Conference or like head and shoulders above, say, Houston, what I've been thinking about is, yeah, sure, the Wolves drawing the Lakers, and I think most people would agree, they probably would have rather played the Nuggets. I can tell you a couple of players even voiced that in the locker room as everyone was kind of sitting there watching the overtime of that Warriors-Clippers game. Some people said that they'd rather play the Nuggets while also being extremely confident in any matchup, blah, 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 blah. Even if, like, the Lakers is the worst matchup they could have gotten, and it does mean that, like, their chances of making the second round are lower than it would have been against X other team. What I've been thinking about is, I'm not sure their chances of making either the West Finals or the NBA Finals goes down if they had played Houston. Like, to me, like, sure, your chances of second round are down, but like, that just gets outweighed by, in theory, having that easier matchup in the second round. So ultimately, not the matchup I would have chose. I don't, in the big picture, I don't think it really matters. And I know down the stretch of the season, my thing was like, because I didn't and probably still don't view this as like the title team the Wolves will have with Ant or whatever. Like, so my goal was always, let's get in the play-in, ideally miss the play or get in the playoffs, ideally miss the play-in like they did, and get into a playoff series that matters, that you have a chance to win, and that will give Ant specifically and other young guys around Ant the most and best experience moving forward. And in that sense, this is obviously that. If you're making the finals, if you're making the West finals, you're going to have to get through a matchup like this or a more difficult one. So like, part of me is just like, might as well be in the first round now. Now that I see the schedule and see how it's spaced out, it's kind of be like, it would have been nice to play LeBron in a kind of more compact series with the games kind of coming back to back. But ultimately, while it's not ideal, I don't view drawing the Lakers as some sort of disaster.
No, I don't think that. I think anybody that's drawing it up that way is probably, you know, someone who just thinks that the Dak is stacked against the Timberwolves, you know, in an unrealistic and, you know, fictional way. But yeah, I think your point about, you know, an opportunity to learn is super good one, because look, like, you know, no question the Timberwolves, you know, learned that they can do it last year against the Suns in the first round against a team, you know, it's got two other superstars on it. Everyone thought the Suns were going to win. They come out and they kind of dominate. And look, I think all these players should have a bunch of confidence. And I think kind of balancing that respect with confidence will just breed like a super competitive series that I think will be a lot of fun. And, you know, you kind of throw into that, that like, I don't think any of the guys in this series on either side of the ledger are going to be intimidated going on the road. Makes it a ton of fun as well.
Yeah. And to me, like, the first spot on that is obviously Ant, like when we're talking about learning. I've thought about the Lakers, and especially after you mentioned like last year's Dallas team was the best, as good as possible to build around Luka. And then my first thought is, well, good. Well, that's really smart GMing by whoever traded him then. That's fantastic stuff there. It would have been nice if that theoretical team would have been able to get Austin Reeves in that trade. Because if Austin Reeves wasn't on this Lakers team, then I would feel a whole lot better about the Wolves' chances of winning that series. But we'll set aside a certain unnamed GM for the time being. And really, what I think about this Lakers team in a big picture sense is like, this is probably the worst, at least in this year compared to next year. This Lakers team is going to be a whole lot better next year. This roster has, in my view, a lot of holes. And those holes are incredibly fixable with a simple free agent offseason of signing a mid-level center, like a point guard, a bench point guard that's better than Gabe Vincent or something. I don't know. Like, their holes are a wing defender. Their holes are obvious and fixable. So if you're going to beat the Lakers in the series, it's going to be much, much easier to do so now than in 12 months, in my opinion. And those roster holes that I see play right into Ant's hand. There's been a lot of talk about like Luka being a bad matchup for the Wolves, and that's certainly either true or just he's a bad matchup for every single team in the league. But if to me, the beginning talking point for this series is who the heck guards Anthony Edwards? What do the Lakers do to guard Anthony Edwards? They'll certainly do like what every team does, high wall, kind of coming up and putting two on the ball, make Ant get off it, play on the gaps, all that stuff. But teams have done that, and Ant has, down the stretch of the season, been much better about getting off the ball, making the right pass. And like you mentioned earlier, Phoenix was a team that was running that type of defense against Ant, and it largely didn't work. So what do you think Ant is going to be able to bring in this series? Are they going to need him to be darn near 40 points a night? And how much like of the mental game is going to like weigh on him this series?
Yeah, I don't know necessarily that, you know, the mental game is going to weigh on him a ton. And the reason why I say that is because I just don't necessarily think that the Lakers are going to try a bunch of different things with Ant, in the sense that I think the Lakers are super confident in their kind of base shell defense, and they're going to have, you know, a guy in the gaps on either side of Ant, and they're just going to, you know, try to have guys dig into Ant's drives and force him to get rid of the ball. But I don't think I don't think they're going to be a team that's just going to constantly blitz Ant, because I don't think they want Luka and LeBron running around on the backside trying to, you know, trying to make up for rotation. So I don't think that's something that you're going to see a ton of. And I just don't think that they want to play drop coverage with, you know, Jackson Hayes doing a ton of, you know, deep dropping, especially when, you know, the Timberwolves have done a much better job of having Julius Randle be the guy that's setting screens for Ant. And as a, you know, downstream impact of that, Rudy Gobert has been his most effective as an offensive player, as a scorer this season for the Timberwolves, and he's been playing out of the dunker. So I think for Ant, the possibilities for him will certainly be there. And I think, you know, not only for him to kind of get guys going in the corner especially, but I think for him too, like, just the way that he sets up his screens and the way that he sets up his dribble handoffs is going to be super important. And I think the more that he can kind of mix up how he decides to go into those things, how to come out of those things, is going to be really important. And I think the more that the Wolves can kind of vary where they're setting screens for him, where they're giving him the ball, have him start off the ball and come get it on the ball, I think all those things that you can try to do to, you know, prevent the Lakers from getting set in that shell as much as you can is going to be really important, because it's a really good defense when they do get set up. And, you know, it's a team that's better at defending the paint without Anthony Davis, which is saying something. And that's just because this team has done an excellent job of keeping ball handlers and cutters out of the paint in general. So if Ant can get into the paint, I don't think that he'll have a whole lot of trouble either scoring or creating for other players. I think it's more just like, what creative ways can the Timberwolves use to help get Ant downhill without having to just exert his energy over and over again. And I think it'll be just as important for Ant to, you know, be patient as it will for the Timberwolves coaching staff to get creative in terms of, you know, how they're using him on the ball.
Yeah. Personally, I'm like really excited to see what Ant can do in this series. Cause like I said, they do play like better defense than their personnel would suggest, but like ultimately in the playoffs, like that type of stuff isn't as important as a lot of time, like having defensive talent and being able to like enforce that side of the court. And I just, no matter what they run, I do think like Ant is going to have like a big series, a huge, like as big of a series as he's had in a long time, or since last year's playoffs, long time. Yeah. And I just, what I've seen down to the stretch from him in the season, especially like when teams do put two on the ball and he's having to like find Rudy in the short roll, he's been so much better at being able to do that. And then like you mentioned, if they're going to play drop coverage with Hayes, Ant's just going to walk into a ton of threes. And that reminds me of like the first, what was it, like a month or so into the season, and teams were just continuously dropping on him, and Ant for just like a month straight was walking into threes and making four at a game at like a 42% clip. I wonder, like the big thing for me is like Ant is going to either have to play as be the best player in the series or like make you think about it with him compared to Luka for them to win this series. If it's, and the opposite is true, if we're talking about LeBron versus Ant as like the second best player in the series, I think the Wolves are going to be in deep trouble. But I just view, and the Lakers aren't going to like rely on a 40-year-old LeBron James as much as they are on Ant. So that's a part of it. But like, I think this is a big, huge opportunity for Ant. Obviously, last year his status rose a lot, and this is just another opportunity for him to kind of hit the gas again. And for all, to me, like if you're looking to pick nits with Ant, and certainly I have, and I'm sure you have picked plenty of nits with Ant throughout this regular season. In the past, those have all gone away during the playoffs. He's been able to kind of brush all of that aside and put together big performance after big performance. And I guess I would expect that to continue.
Yeah, for sure. And I think for Ant, it's just going to come down to me anyways. It's going to come down a lot to, can he find the right balance between being smart and taking what the defense is giving him and, you know, kind of objectively doing what is best for the offense in terms of trying to create the best shot possible versus, you know, remaining aggressive enough so that the defense isn't just kind of completely taking him out of the game from, you know, a mentality and a, you know, attacking standpoint. And I think, you know, those are kind of things that you kind of got to go through the fire in order to learn. Mm-hmm. And I think certainly Ant now having, you know, 27 games of playoff experience, that's certainly something that he can build on. And I think especially last season, you know, how many different types of defense that he saw or that he faced, and how much teams are switching it up on him from night to night basis this season, I think will certainly help. And again, too, I think everyone wants to first talk about LeBron in terms of the days in between games and all of that. But I do think it's also going to be really important, too, for a lesser experienced Timberwolves team to be able to, you know, kind of get in the film room and figure out, all right, this is what we just saw. How can we turn around and fix this? Because I do think that, you know, again, the Wolves, if they're able to play to an identity and play super hard, you know, I think that can kind of weigh on a Lakers team too. So it'll be kind of interesting to see for me, first and foremost, though, how Ant balances the, you know, doing the right thing versus maintaining an aggression.
Yeah, that balance to me has been the story of Anthony Edwards' season the entire time. There was a point it didn't come up. Like I said, he was walking into threes that whole first month. But when they did start to bring, when November, December, when teams just started to blitz him, and he ended up being like the most blitz player in the league this season. When teams started to doing that, he struggled in December and probably like early January. He was like varying wildly between getting off the ball too much or just like trying to go hero ball. There's those Warriors games where he was just, I would say, just not as good as they needed him to be. And I just feel like that has gotten so much better down the stretch of the season. And clearly, like you mentioned, the time off, I think the coaching staff has really been able to show him like what he needs to do and find that balance between.
Yeah. And just to go off of that, like this is from Owen Phillips, the stat that you're referencing, Ant got blitzed on 15% of his pick and rolls. And the Timberwolves still had an 117 offensive rating when Anthony Edwards got blitzed on pick and rolls. And that's still a pretty darn good, you know, mark to be living at. I mean, 117 offensive rating right now would put them in the seventh spot this season in offense in terms of how they handled that. And they're in the eighth spot overall on the season. So again, I think the way that Ant has grown and matured and handled that is super important, but I would just be surprised if the Lakers blitz him a ton, considering how thin they are on the bench. You know, maybe they blitz him more if Vanderbilt's out there, but I just don't think that they've got the guys to rotate behind and fly around as much as people might seem to think they will.
Yeah, that's a good point. It'd obviously be some part of their game that'll they'll throw out everything, but like you make a good point that it might be not their 1A plan like it is with other teams. If they played Houston, you'd have to imagine that would be a big part of Houston's game. Let's move to the other side of the ball. Obviously, Wolves fans are familiar with Luka Doncic. This whole Timberwolves team is familiar with Luka Doncic. Obviously, he ended there what is, I believe, is the best Timberwolves season in history last year and ended in the Western Conference Finals fairly unceremoniously, similar to Luka's run in Dallas ended fairly unceremoniously, or recently too ceremoniously, if you follow my drift. But stopping Luka Doncic will be a big point of this series. To the extent that you can stop such an unbelievable player, it's incredible that the Lakers have possibly the greatest player to ever live, and he's not the best player on their team. It's been kind of scary to see when he first started playing with the Lakers. Maybe it was mental, maybe it was physical, but he just kind of seemed off. And as of late, I think he's brushed off, probably going back to Dallas probably helped him mentally. I'm sure he's brushed off a lot of that. Jaden will start on him, I would assume. That'll be like the first 1A matchup. And I'm just kind of curious of like who else they throw at him, whether it's Randall or Nikhil's probably too small or Nas at times. But what it looks like you mentioned, being a totally different team than Dallas, like how much is the difference between Gafford, Lively to now Jackson Hayes? How much does that affect Luka being able to throw lobs when they go small with DFS and Rui playing the two big slots? How much does that affect him? Because I do think, well, obviously Luka can score one-on-one, hit the step backs, do all that. The lob game was as big of a factor as him torching the Wolves as him scoring himself was. So what do you think the Wolves are going to be able to slow him down more than they did last year, or is Jaden just not the type of defender for Luka?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody's the type of defender for Luka Doncic. I think he can do whatever he wants on any given night, regardless of who's guarding him. I think, you know, my thing is that, you know, last year with the Mavericks, they had 48 minutes of lob threats on the floor, because PJ Washington's also a lob threat. So you'd have three different guys that you can choose from between Gafford, Lively, and Washington, and Jones, sure. That could all get active in that pick and roll game and a bunch of different type of lineup combinations that Dallas could put together. But with the Lakers, Hayes is the only lob threat that they have, because I don't think you're going to see a ton of LeBron screening for Luka and then rolling and wanting to play above the rim. And so, and the thing with Jackson Hayes is, you know, Jackson Hayes in games that really matter for the Lakers generally ends up playing less than 20 minutes in those games. And I think that JJ Redick just totally wants to default to what he trusts in terms of lineup and style of play. And it has more to do with the defense than anything else for me. And that's when they go small. And I think that there's just some concessions that this Lakers team has to make because of their roster, like you kind of talked about off the top. And I just think that not having the threat of vertical spacing, I think will allow the Timberwolves to rotate more cleanly on the backside to get to those shooters. And I think, again, without having to worry about that quite as much, I do think that will allow Rudy Gobert to stay on the floor a little bit easier, because I think just trying to fly out to a shooter and then, you know, run a shooter off the line or break down and, you know, then create a bunch of different isolation situations, I'm more than fine with that, because Rudy Gobert has shown us over the course of his career with the Wolves that he's more than capable of defending out on the perimeter. So I think for me, the biggest thing with Jackson Hayes is just going to be, you got to keep him off the offensive glass, right? I think, you know, in those minutes where he is going to play, in the 12 to 15 minutes that he is going to play, obviously you do have to be cognizant of, you know, of him as a lob threat. And I think the Timberwolves, you know, certainly will be, but I don't think that they can let that come at the cost of giving up wide open corner threes, which we certainly saw happen a ton last season, that Dallas series with them having to tag the roller, created a lot of open corner threes on the backside. So it'll be interesting for me how much Jackson Hayes plays. And, you know, if the Timberwolves can kind of prove that they can find success on the offensive end of the floor while Jackson Hayes is out there, and maybe play him off the floor a little bit, I think it might simplify what the Timberwolves want to do on the defensive end of the floor. And that'll be big for them. But yeah, I do think that Jaden McDaniels will be the guy that you put on Luka. Cause I just don't think the Timberwolves are going to want to risk putting Ant or Julius Randle on Luka, because they're so important to what the Wolves have to do offensively, that I don't think you can risk either of those guys getting in foul trouble, when you consider that, okay, if Jaden gets in foul trouble, you can bring in Nikhil, you can bring in Dante, you can bring in Jalen Clark, you could even bring in Terrence Shannon Jr. to try to steal two or three minutes here or there. So I think the Timberwolves would be kind of rolling the dice a bit if they didn't go with Jaden.
Yeah, I agree. And we can kind of broaden this topic, the Garden Luka topic, into the defense as a whole with Rudy here. Because, like you said, they're not like as pure of a pick and roll team than Dallas was last year, where there isn't like a hard roll threat like there was with Gafford and Lively, where the Wolves have to be so concerned about not just Luka doing what he's doing, but him finding the roller for dunks or lobs. Obviously, there would be part of that for the Lakers, but that's not their like 1A why they're good offensively. But they do have, like, where the Mavericks only had one secondary scorer with Kyrie off the ball. The Lakers do have two. They have LeBron and Reeves, who both can, especially like through a rotating defense, can carve that up if that's where the Wolves are at. So that's kind of like the give and take of what this Lakers team versus the Dallas team does well offensively. Obviously, we talk about quote unquote narratives. Obviously, the narrative on Rudy's career in the playoffs has just gotten so out of hand at this point. The Terrence Mann game, people have not been able to get that out of their heads in terms of what Rudy's going to be able to do. I do think, like, any minutes that Lakers play Jackson Hayes just kind of feels like a gift to the Wolves. It just makes it, while, like, the five out stuff with Rudy, like, how, like I said, the narratives are so out of base with that in terms of, like, playing him off the floor, quote unquote, it does, like, that is the most effective way to play when you're going up against Rudy, because it does take away some of what he's good at. And so playing Hayes, and to a lesser extent playing Vanderbilt, does give those easy minutes to plop Rudy on, plop Rudy on those guys, have him sit in the paint and do what he does best. So when the Lakers do go five out, which I would assume would be Rui and DFS playing the bigs, and then the big three of LeBron, Luka, and Reeves, what does the Wolves look like then? And is Rudy going to be able to, like I said, I'm confident Rudy is going to be able to defend well in those lineups, even if it's not like his best defensive alignment. DFS and Rudy can shoot, but they're not Malik Beasley or whatever as corner 3-point shooters. So there will be, like, he'll have to recover out to those guys in the corner. My question is, like, him offensively is when they go with that lineup, they're going to need him to dominate that lineup and not score 30 points a game or whatever, like he did against Brooklyn, but, like, get, like, dominate the offensive rebounds. Like, there's just no one there to box him out. So grab a bunch of offensive rebounds and just, like, I guess this is true with every defensive alignment, like, be able to play out of the short roll, make the correct pass. And the backdowns obviously aren't something that we're looking for, but even just, like, if he gets great positions, he's been doing this lately, gets the ball great, either pump fake, take a single dribble and dunk. He's been doing that fairly well as of late. So I think, like, Rudy is in, especially against those smaller lineups, is, like, such a big X factor in this series to me, because the Wolves to me are just not good enough defensively for, like, in the big picture, like, for 30 minutes a night when Rudy's not out there.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And I think, you know, how the Wolves try to play defense while Rudy's out there is going to be important too. Cause I think, you know, maybe one area where I think this Timberwolves team is worse than the Timberwolves team last year was that I think team last year was much more used to having Rudy out in space and was much better at rotating behind Rudy and protecting the rim. I think Karl Anthony Towns is significantly better at that than Julius Randle is. And, you know, we'll obviously get into, you know, Julius, obviously the good things that Randle does and how that will give the Wolves some different advantages that they didn't have last year. But yeah, I mean, look, the Wolves are going to have to do a really good job of trying to keep the ball in the middle of the floor and taking away corner, you know, outlet passes, because, you know, Finney Smith, 44.5% from three. Rui Hachimura, 44.5% from three. Gabe Vincent, 39.5% from three. Austin Reeves, 46.5% from three. Jordan Goodwin, 39.5% from three. All those guys are really, really good corner 3-point shooters. And I think, like, how well those guys shoot the three from the corners could very well determine the series. But again, I think if you can rotate effectively behind, you know, whether it's Rudy in space or Julius in space, whoever it is, and be able to run those corner 3-point shooters off the line and force them to play below the 3-point line, then I think the Timberwolves could certainly be in business on the defensive end of the floor. But yeah, I think it's just going to be, for me, how do the Timberwolves go about trying to, you know, use the length that Jaden McDaniels and Rudy Gobert have what do they choose to use that length to slow down? Do they try to take away some of the passing angles that Luka has? Do they do that to try to be more of, you know, defensive playmakers and let, you know, someone like Randle or Nas try to guard Luka, and then, you know, McDaniels and Gobert are the ones that are rotating. So I think that's kind of going to be the biggest question mark for me, because, you know, again, I just think that the Lakers are going to be more than comfortable just, you know, flinging the ball around to try to create as many open corner 3-point shoot, you know, opportunities as they can, because they're probably expecting that the Wolves are going to want to try to keep the ball out of Luka Doncic and LeBron James' hand in the middle of the floor. So I think, yeah, I think for me, that's got to be the number one key, is that if Rudy's going to be out there, the guys behind him got to rotate run shooters off the line, and they can't just fly by. They've got to get out there and, you know, and close out effectively.
Yeah, it's going to be, I do think it's going to kind of be a series where, like you mentioned, there's so many important defensive things the Wolves have to do, but ultimately, like, they have LeBron, or they do have LeBron James, and they have Luka Doncic, and the Wolves have Anthony Edwards. There's just going to be a point where the other team's not going to be able to stop either one of those type of players. And it's going to be, to a certain extent, and I kind of think this is always true with high-level NBA playoff series and why the Wolves ultimately didn't make the finals last year, is their offense just wasn't good enough, is you just got to be able to, at times, Wolves certainly had defensive masterpieces last season in the playoffs, but there's going to come a playoff series where you're just going to have to score. And I think the Wolves are getting that kind of type of series right out of the gate. They're just going to have to outscore the Lakers. And we talked about Ant, and another biggest piece of that is Julius Randle, their second leading scorer. I do worry that this is not necessarily like a good series for Julius Randle. They do it to me. It feels like they have a lot of guys to throw at Randle in terms of like stopping the bully ball stuff. How much they want to kind of tax LeBron, how much like Randle can wear down LeBron James using bully ball is interesting to me. Do they not put LeBron on Randle? Do they go with Hachimura would be the first person that comes to mind as someone else to put on him. Is he small? Is he too small or not a good enough defender to that? Do they try to go do they try to go hunting LeBron to try to tire him out? But I just wonder if Randle is, if he's up for the task. Because to me, what I don't want to see them do is a lot of Randle post-ups. I don't think that's going to be effective offense. There's a question if it's really ever been quality offense all year. There's been times that obviously has, but the Lakers don't have, like, how many defenders could Randle get a post-up against where you'd be like, yeah, this is a positive reaction? Because it's, to me, it's not against Luka. That's like the one thing defensively I feel good about with Luka Doncic, is just one-on-one post defense. I think he's probably fine with that. So it's like just Austin Reeves in their starting lineup, and then like Gabe Vincent off the bench, obviously. So it's going to need to be more of like a ball movement type of series for Randle. And he's shown more of an ability to do that, but it overall it's just a worry for me. So how do you foresee Randle's like offensive series?
Yeah, I think for me, a lot of it comes down to where they position him on the floor. I think, you know, we've seen Randle play out of the corner a little bit more at times over the second half of the season. And I think, you know, he's certainly done a better job of shooting out of the corner, you know, really just in general over that frame. And I think that it is really important for the Wolves, because I do think that it unlocks a little bit more in terms of, you know, maybe using Jaden as a screener for Ant a little bit more, which is certainly something that they could get into a little bit more. But if they're going to end up playing Julius Randle in the slot, which I think is something that would be, you know, obviously smart for them to do, I think that he's going to have to be really decisive and really on, you know, on target with a lot of his passes. Because look, Julius Randle does have a rare ability as a guy that is both very effective at putting the ball on the deck, but also, you know, using his size and strength and athleticism really to draw the defense in and then play make out of that. And that's a huge area that the Timberwolves upgraded in terms of what he does better than Karl Anthony Towns. And I think that's really helpful in a situation like this where teams are going to play in the gaps, and the guys who are one pass away are going to have to be really effective with the ball in their hands. And I think for Randle, you know, he talked earlier this week at practice about, you know, not needing to go be the guy that gets 30. Like, I think if Julius Randle ends up averaging like 17, 8, and 8 in this series, I think the Timberwolves win this series. Like, I think Julius Randle is going to be the guy that needs to lead the Timberwolves in assists in this series if they want to find success. Because look, like, Julius Randle is stronger than Rui Hachimura. He's stronger than Dorian Finney-Smith. And you can make an argument, right or wrong, that he's right there with LeBron in terms of his strength. And I think, you know, one other thing to, you know, to look at, like, It's the first year in LeBron's career where the Lakers were a better team with him on, like his team was better with him on the bench than on the floor. And if you just want to look at the the Lakers defensive rating with respect to LeBron being on or off the floor, like they had a defensive rating of 117 with LeBron on the floor this year. It's 25th in the NBA. And with him off the floor, their defensive rating was 109.1. That'd be tied for second in the NBA. And I think the more that you can activate, you know, and force LeBron to get in a stance and guard and have it be someone like Julius Randle that's super physical and is going to have the ball in his hands quite a bit, I think that's super important. And then if the Lakers do decide to put Rui Hachimura on him, like you want to look at the last, you know, since the start of the 23-24 season, they've matched up four times. And Rui Hachimura has been the guy that's guarded, you know, Julius Randle the most out of any of the guys in the Lakers. And Julius Randle has 20 points on 9 of 10 shooting from inside the arc, 4 assists, no turnovers, and has drawn 1 shooting foul in those, you know, 75-ish possessions. So like, it's pretty good numbers. And I don't think that Rui Hachimura is as good of a defender as he gets credit for, especially against guys that are just as big as he is. So I think it'll be interesting to see what happens, because I actually think this is a really good series for Julius Randle in terms of, you know, if he's able to be really successful, I think that Lakers are probably banking on what you're saying, that like, oh, well, we've got the guys to handle it. We're not really going to worry about it too much. But like Julius Randle was an all NBA player a couple of seasons ago. And we've seen why over the second half of the season. I just think that he's going to have so much opportunity with the ball in his hands to make or break this series for the Wolves, because Anthony Edwards is not going to be able to have the ball in his hands the whole entire time. And he knows that. And I think, you know, the more that he can create open looks for, you know, all of his teammates, whether that's Dante, Nas, Jaden, like you got to trust that those guys are going to knock down those shots.
Yeah. It's, the biggest thing that you said there is, I think, like, making decisions quickly will be the biggest thing. That's been an up and down thing for him all year. Certainly at the beginning of the season, it was pretty brutal with the slow decisions, the slow back downs, the brutal turnovers. Although I always bring up, like, those weren't always fully his fault. Like, he had 4 guys on the court, just statues out there. But that, a lot of that has gotten better. And certainly, like, right before he got hurt and right after he got hurt, he was doing a fantastic job, like playing within the flow of the offense and making quick decisions. So that's going to be the biggest thing to me is, can you make quick, right decisions?
And I think he understands like what those decisions are supposed to be and like what his optimal role in the offense is for the team to be its most successful. And I think that's certainly important when you're kind of comparing and contrasting, you know, what he looked like at the start of the year versus what he looks like now. And it seems like he's pretty secure in what his role is now. Yeah. And I think that's huge for the Wolves.
Yeah, him and Finch talked to practice of like, it just, Finch said said something I thought was eye-opening. It was like, he flatly underestimated what those guys, referring to Randle and DiVincenzo, kind of had to go through more so off the court, kind of with the trade and the timing. Like, I just think it took them months to get their lives in order. To get, like, it's one thing, I think, like, if you get traded in the deadline, you get a hotel or you rent a condo or whatever for a couple months, you leave your stuff back at the other team and you figure it out in the offseason. And obviously, if you get traded at the beginning of the offseason, you have time to move cities. But, like, those guys both have kids and they had to move almost immediately. I can't imagine how difficult that was. And so I think there's kind of been this narrative that, like, coming from Vikings fans, and obviously you often want Viking profile pictures when talking about the Twins or the Wolves are often not the best sports takes out there, but there's like this Sam Darnold moment that I think people are expecting from Randle, where like him going into free agency, he's gonna have, you know, Darnold was more consistent than Randle was obviously throughout the season, with Randle having more pedigree. Like, there's gonna be this moment of, oh, Randle stinks, they're obviously moving off from him. And I'm not sure that's really gonna come, but I do think like this is going to be a good, for him and Nas and Nikhil, it's going to be a good litmus test of like who they want to bring back, because it's hard to imagine all three of those guys being back next year.
For sure.
All right, the last starter we haven't talked about yet, Mike Conley. Looking at it for me, I'm just really concerned about where they're going to find minutes, at least against the Lakers starters, for him. There just doesn't seem to be a a good matchup to quote unquote hide him on. And it's not that he can't play. Certainly, like, Gabe Vincent will come in, and that's a perfect matchup for Mike. I just worry, like, down the stretches of games, where they can hide him, or where they can, because, like, if they're just, like, putting him on Austin Reeves, I think that's tough. Maybe Rui is, like, an option in the sense of, like, obviously that's not good. Like, Rui is much stronger than he is and bigger. But, like, ultimately, if the Lakers are trying to, like, use Rui to attack Mike, that's less time for Doncic, that's less time for everyone else. I don't know. That's, like, a thought I had. But, like, how do you view finding minutes for Mike and having him be successful? Because I do think he's just gotten better as the season has gone on. He's gotten healthier. He's not, like, obviously he's not as good. Any player at his age is going to be worse year over year. On average, the trend line is going to go down. But I do think, like, the Mike is washed stuff, I think, was always probably unfair. But ultimately, like, a guy at his age and his size, I do worry about him in this type of matchup.
Yeah, I think for me, I agree completely that Gabe Vincent is a better matchup for Mike. And there's going to be moments in which, you know, Gabe Vincent will be out there for sure. And I think, you know, looking at the Lakers rotation, I mean, a lot of times what ends up happening is, you know, Vincent kind of comes in for LeBron as the second sub off the bench, you know, kind of a little more than midway through that first quarter, kind of, you know, kind of in the spot where Nikhil Alexander-Walker comes in the game. And I think, honestly, it would be better for the Timberwolves to start Nikhil Alexander-Walker in this series, and then, or Dante DiVincenzo, and then bring Mike Conley off the bench when Vincent comes in, and then close the first quarter, you know, with Rudy Gobert, and try to see if you can, you know, have your way more so offensively in those Rudy and Mike minutes against, you know, a Lakers team that generally will have three guards out there and Luka, Reeves, Gabe Vincent, and then Rui and Dorian Finney-Smith, you know, midway through the first quarter. And then they generally like to bring Hayes back into the game for a couple of minutes to end the first quarter. So I think, honestly, like, the timing of that works out a little bit better. I know that, you know, part of the argument for, you know, Mike and having consistent run is, like, him playing the first 6 minutes of every quarter or something like that. And that's kind of what the Wolves formula has been for quite some time. But, like, I just think you're kind of playing with fire. If you start Mike Conley, he's going to guard Austin Reeves. I mean, looking since the start of the 23-24 season, Mike Conley's played Austin Reeves, you know, seven times, and he has by far the most amount of, you know, possessions guarding Austin Reeves over that time. He's guarded Austin Reeves for about a fourth of the time that Austin Reeves has been on the court. So I think, you know, that's the matchup for him. And I think, again, like, it also could just be tough for Mike to stay out of foul trouble too. Like, if they're just going to consistently hunt him, I think, you know, the only positive that I could see from Mike from a defensive perspective is just that, you know, if he's able to play up the line and he can kind of, in some cases, deny the ball and force, you know, Reeves to have to work up the floor a little bit more to get his touches, I think that might help just to force the Lakers into more late clock situations and force them to play a little bit more in one-on-one. But then the other thing too that I worry about a little bit in terms of the Lakers offense, if I'm a Lakers fan, is just that, you know, if Mike Conley's out there, the Lakers may be in a spot where they're just spending way too much time trying to fudge with the matchups and find the one guy that they want to just attack relentlessly. And they get too caught up in trying to, you know, attack a certain guy that they aren't running good offense. Right. And mm-hmm. So that'll be something too, that I think you monitor with Mike, but I just would be considering how the Lakers like to construct the rotation with then, you know, having Reeves, LeBron, Dorian Finney-Smith, Rui and Luka, you know, that small ball lineup that's been awesome for them, plays the majority of the second quarter. And to put it kindly, like, I just don't think there's much of a spot for Mike in that type of lineup. I think he's got to be out there when, you know, when Hayes is out there and they're running more standard pick and roll stuff, and he can be kind of a chaser around that kind of construct of an offense.
Yeah, I agree. As far as starting Mike, I think what's clear is, at least for game one, they're going to go with Mike as the starting point guard. And this is kind of a generalization about usually coaches wait until the second game to make a big change, just because it's like you want to feel at your opponent, at least originally, and then you don't want to like signal to your team or whatever, like, we're waving the white flag, or we're going to try to play how we want to play first, and then if we need to make a change, we'll do so. And that kind of how the season went, they started Mike for a long time, and then they eventually went to Dante to start for that short stretch, and then once after Dante got hurt, the rest of the season they were winning games, and they stuck with Mike. That kind of brings us into like my main topic, is like who closes for this team, and obviously Mike versus Dante or Nikhil is like one of the biggest ones there. I kind of agree with you, because the Lakers ultimately are going to go small. I do think, like your point about like if the Lakers are trying to relentlessly attack Mike with like Reeves or Hachimura on a switch or whatever, like they're missing out on Luka possessions. They're missing out on LeBron possessions. Like, I don't think in the big picture that's necessarily what they want to do, but also I think to a certain extent Reeves is not a good matchup for Mike. So what do you think is like, what should be the Wolves closing lineup, either if the Lakers are going with their traditional lineup with Hayes or if they're going small with DFS and Rui? And to me, like the two biggest pivot points there, because I think Ant and Jaden are almost in every single one of those lineups, barring foul trouble. So it's like, do you want to go with Mike or Dante as the quote unquote point guard, or I guess Nikhil? And then which two combinations of bigs do you want to go with? I have a hard time seeing how like Rudy's not on the court either. Like the Nas, Randall, obviously there'll be time for that, but like as like a closing, let's win this game. To me, it's like, it's more about Randall or Nas. Down the stretch, what do you think is like the Wolves five man lineup?
Yeah, well, I'll guarantee you that the Lakers are going to close with their small ball five. That's kind of how they've been doing it in every game that matters, and that lineup has been awesome for them. I mean, you want to look at what they've done in the fourth quarter. You know, Luka, Reeves, Finney Smith, LeBron, and Hachimura is plus 22.5 net rating and 37 fourth quarter minutes across, you know, the nine games that they've played together, and oh, that's nothing to sneeze at. And you might say, oh, that's a really small sample size. And I will turn around and say to you, the Timberwolves' normal starting five this season in terms of minutes played together in the fourth quarter, 65 minutes. So let's just say, for the ease of conversation, they've played twice as many minutes. It's the worst fourth quarter lineup that the Timberwolves have. It's minus 29.3 net rating. Their offensive rating is the problem. It's an 85.8 offensive rating. And I just worry that if you roll that out there, that the offense is totally going to sputter. And conversely, like, you know, it will be interesting to see if Rudy's out there, if the offense does start to slip. And I think how well the offense is playing while Rudy's out there will be a huge determinant in whether or not he closes, because I think you look at a lot of the, you know, really good lineups that the Timberwolves have had in the fourth quarter, it's mostly been that Jaden, Randall, and Nas triumvirate in the front court. I mean, you know, really, it's been four guys on the floor. I mean, with Ant, Jaden, Randall, and Nas, and Nikhil in there, it's plus 32.7 in 24 minutes. And then if you have DDV instead of Nah, it's plus 18 in 23 minutes. So I think that for me, it will be, I don't think Mike Conley is going to close in any scenario. I think if he does close, I think that is a sign of, like, Chris Finch needing to be proven wrong in order to pivot off of that, which I think would be somewhat disappointing. But I mean, that's just kind of the way that Chris Finch is, and I respect that and I understand that, because it's been, you know, largely successful over the last few seasons. But for me, yeah, I would have Dante out there. I think his shooting and his competitiveness and his ability to, you know, just kind of get in and rebound and dive on the floor is super important. And I think too, especially when, you know, you're in a situation where team is playing in the gaps, like the guys who are one pass away, we saw that was a huge reason why Dante started over Mike in the first place, was because team started blitzing Ant more. He was really struggling when Mike was right next to him, so they put Dante in there, and Dante being able to just shoot the leather off the ball was super important. And so I think they need to have that. And then I think really it will come down to, so I think you're going to have DDV, Ant, Jaden, and then I think it will come down to which two of the three guys do you you know, trust to keep it rolling the most based on the game script between Randall, Nas, and Rudy. And I certainly think too, like if Nikhil's having just a banger fourth quarter and you want to leave him in there and have, you know, either Jaden or Dante come out of the game, I get that. But I would just be hard pressed to think that, you know, having the Lakers just pick on Mike Conley in clutch time is it. Cause I just, there haven't been a whole lot of off, there haven't been a whole lot of games this season. And again, I mean this in, with absolutely no disrespect, but like there just haven't been a whole lot of games this season that I can think of off the dome. And maybe it's on me for not having a good enough memory, but like they're just not a whole lot of situations where I can remember like, man, like Mike being out there for offensive purposes at the end of games was the reason why they won this game.
Yeah. And that's a complete flip from last year where it was almost the exact opposite, where it's kind of felt like every time the Wolves would have a successful clutch time, it was because Mike Conley saved their butt. So that's been a complete flip. And I think for me, for game one, I expect them to, unfortunately or fortunately, whatever you want to view it, they will roll with that regular starting lineup unless it's just a complete disaster early in the game. And I think by probably game two is when Finch will start, if needed, go away from that and start really pivoting away from it. Because I do think last season he wasn't afraid to sit the guys that needed to be sat. I think I remember certainly Kat sat down the stretch. Game seven against Denver was probably the best game of Kat's career, and he was out of that game until I believe Rudy fouled out, and then Kat has the putback to basically end the game. And there was times where Rudy sat, and it wasn't just like offense defense at the end of the game. I feel like I remember there was times where they just felt like Kat and Nas were the pairing, or I don't know, maybe did they go one big ever down the, I don't remember, but that I do think like that'll be a key is, and I don't like any of the quote unquote politics of this whole thing that may have played a role earlier in the season with guys, I think will go right out the window. It's going to be who gives us the best five, who are the five best players that give us a chance to win in this specific scenario. And to be honest, it might not be the same five game to game. There might be, like you mentioned, Nikhil might have a game. There might be a Mike game where they find some sort of defensive strategy that works and they need the playmaking or whatever. But as much as trying to pick out which five, and I generally agree with your point of view, it's just going to be like they need to be flexible with it. And they really kind of haven't been to this point in the regular season. But I think that'll change in the playoffs if and when it needs to. Lastly here, I think we'll do what every good podcast does and give a hot take or whatever you call it, and a series prediction at the very least expectations. But personally, I'm going to give what my prediction is here. Seen a lot of national media picking the Lakers and seen a lot of local people picking the Wolves. And while I do think the national media is probably short selling the Wolves and outplaying the Lakers, personally, I am going to pick Lakers in seven. And it honestly has almost nothing to do with what we've talked about. It comes down to clutch time. The Wolves have just been so, I mean, really, they haven't been great the past 3 years. Obviously, the Memphis series is like the abomination of that kind of type of stuff. But the Wolves' net rating in clutch time is the lowest of any current playoff team, with that might go to third lowest if the Heat sneak in here. But other than the Pistons, the Wolves have been the worst playoff team of the current, we have 14 playoff teams solidified. And I personally, coming up against LeBron in the late, I think the Wolves are the better team on paper. If you look at like net ratings, even like, I think a lot of people say, well, the Lakers net rating doesn't necessarily do them justice because their team changed so much after getting Luka. And that's certainly true. But I looked up their net rating after getting Luka. It's the same. It's the exact same numbers. And I don't think that truly, here, I have a stat. The Lakers are the second team in NBA history, or since the merger, since the ABA-NBA merger, to win 50 games with a net rating of 1.5 or less. So, like, they're an outlier in terms of net rating and wins. The problem is that other team is the 2018 Cleveland Cavaliers that went to the NBA Finals. Probably, other than the championships, LeBron James's crowning achievement was dragging that crappy Cavs team to the Finals. And that run obviously ends with basically J.R. Smith taking the ball out in when they're down one. Or no, it was tied and they lose in overtime. The Wolves are the better team in paper, and I do think they're going to have the lead in almost every fourth quarter. I think that's what will come down to it. And personally, I just don't trust them to either run away with four total games or win enough clutch games to win 4 out of 7. What do you think? Do you have a series prediction? Am I the opposite of a homer is for picking the Lakers?
No, I have this well documented that I'm also picking Lakers in 7. I think that these teams are much closer than a lot of people seem to give the Timberwolves credit for. But yeah, I just think that the Timberwolves have one of the four best players in this series. And I think anytime a team has three of the four best players in a series, in a series where, you know, both teams' rotations are going to be pretty tight and guys are going to be able to play a ton of minutes because the games are pretty spread out, I just think that that's a massive advantage for the Lakers, especially considering that, you know, the Timberwolves' biggest issues have been, you know, clutch time execution this year. But one thing that I just would like to point out, last season, the Timberwolves in the clutch, -13.1 net rating. In the playoffs last season, +15.5. And the Timberwolves in the regular season this year in the clutch, -8.4, -8.4. So I'm not saying that, you know, that means that the Timberwolves are going to be much better in the clutch in the postseason, but I'm just saying, like, I do think that there can exist an opportunity for, you know, playing the same teams over and over again, especially with maybe some younger guys, and McDaniels and Nas and Nikhil and all those guys now that are kind of going through it for the third time together. Like, I do think that there may be something to them operating a little bit better in the clutch in the postseason, because you know what you're going to get. You're probably more locked into the game plan. And the Lakers are probably just going to sell out a little bit more to try to stop Ant, which might create some cleaner opportunities for the Wolves. But again, I mean, an interesting part of that is just that, you know, the Timberwolves defense in the clutch is actually been better this season than it was last season. So it wasn't like, it wasn't like it was that historic defense that was, you know, that was doing a lot of the heavy lifting for the Wolves in the, in the playoffs. And I think for the Wolves, I mean, they were pretty balanced. They were, they had a 122 offensive rating in the playoffs last year in the clutch, and they had a 106.5 defensive rating in the clutch. So, I mean, it's not like one side of the ball was really, you know, carrying them there. I think it was both sides of the ball working pretty well together. So I think, again, this Timberwolves team also has a lot of balance, like the one we saw last season. But I would not be surprised whatsoever if the Timberwolves win the series. I just think that, you know, you have both two teams that are not scared at all of going on the road, guys that can all have huge nights on any given night. And, you know, again, I think the Timberwolves having a deeper bench and being able to withstand maybe some foul trouble or guys having a really off night a little bit easier than the Lakers would probably swing it to the Wolves side of things for me. But would love to be proven wrong. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah. And I do think, and I it seems like you're in this boat too, while we're picking the Lakers, it's more of in the sense of like 51 is greater than 49 or 55 is greater than 4. Like, it's not that we view this as some sort of unsurmountable task for the Wolves. It's just like, if you're telling us to, here's a good point. Again, I don't bet on sports, but like, if you're giving us even money on the series, we take the Lakers, but they're -195. If you're asking me for value on the series price, I would probably go with the Wolves. I think that's where I'm at. Now, where that exact line is, I don't know where that evens out or whatever, but I do just a team that, while I think your clutch stats that they've improved and it's not as bad as it was a season ago is true. I just, like, ultimately think if you're making me pick something, I'm gonna go with Luka Doncic and LeBron James against a team that just
that's kind of where I'm at.
Just doesn't quite. I don't know, and maybe that's dumb. Maybe whatever I'm doing here, you can't see it because we're audio only. Whatever that is that I think a lot of Wolves fans feel, maybe that's just fake. Maybe it's just not real. And that's like the Minnesota sports of it all. Let me rephrase. The Minnesota men's sports of it all, that like we just are not having it. But also, like, if I came in here and says Wolves in four, that's a homer take right there. But yeah, I think anything can happen. I guess I would, either team winning in five would pretty much knock me off. But I guess we didn't expect the Wolves to sweep the Suns. And we certainly, if people were picking the Mavericks, it was in six or seven games. So yeah, it'll be fun. The funnest part is there's a good chance on Saturday night when that game is over, none of what we said here matters. And we'll all have new talking points about what went wrong, what went right. It'll be fun. Jack, you're going down there for games one and two. I'm trying to get down there for game two myself. We'll have Leo there for game one. So this pod will be there covering the series. I'll probably try to do some sort of quick hitter after game one. And then Leo and I sometime as well, we'll hop on and, recap game one. Jack, what do you got going on for coverage of the series?
Yeah, just like after every single game of the Timberwolves regular season, me and my man Luke Inman will be going live on the Locked On Sports Minnesota YouTube channel. So we go live, within 5-10 minutes of the buzzer going off for instant analysis and reaction. We'll probably go anywhere from 30 to 40 minutes after those games, and then you can find the audio of that after the fact on the Locked On Wolves audio feed, where Ben Beacon does a great job, breaking it down every day, Monday through Friday. So I joined him for Friday's show on that feed. So doing kind of a little bit of what we did here, covering a few different things, it'll be a ton of fun. I've never been to LA, so I'm very excited to go see Luka's, playoff debut as a Laker, and hopefully see the Wolves at least get one. So the energy coming back home is pretty good.
Yeah, I will point out that if they don't get one, like, we're close to like banning you from going on these road trips, because unfortunately you did go down to Dallas. No, they got one in Dallas. We're closer to banning you from Target. We're closer to banning you from Target Center, I guess, at this point.
Hey, I don't know. I was there. I pronounced the Suns dead in game one, towards the end of game one. I pronounced them dead just because I thought that they just were not connected and did not want to fight at all. I didn't go to Denver, so maybe that was the problem. Maybe that was it, but, we'll see.
Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. Certainly if the Suns weren't dead after game four, who baby are they? Are they dead now with whatever the heck is going on in Phoenix? I do wonder about those 26 other teams that would switch place with the Suns. I wonder how those teams are doing. But
the Kings are certainly one of them, though, I think. Tough day to be a Kings fan, too.
Yeah, and the Mavs are not far behind them. The Sixers are in rough spots. Not sure what the heck New Orleans is doing. Yeah, it's been a disaster for a lot of NBA teams. The Nuggets are not a disaster, but I don't know what the heck went there. Like, hey, it's a lot.
Win, lose, or draw, you better be thankful the Wolves are, in a pretty good spot here right now and moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. It'll be a topic for the offseason, but I do think the Wolves are pretty well set up. The Cat trade, we'll have time to argue about what the season looks like with Cat on it versus Randall, but certainly for the future, we'll argue about whether this or not this is worth it or not. The Wolves are better set up for the future post-trade. So, catch Jack on the Locked On Network after games during this series, and come back here this weekend for analysis of game one against the Lakers. But for Jack, I'm Ryan. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Go Wolves.